Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the comfort and support with a new mattress from Serta. Find the perfect mattress for a deep and restorative night's sleep. Take control of your sleep and save big money on Serta mattresses now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 301. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is good. It's good. Cannot complain one bit. So we're always glad to talk about baseball. We went over the 300 hump for the episode. If we're hitting 300, we're doing pretty good. Yeah, you know, it's very thankful to have hit that milestone. And yeah, now we're churning for more. So got a good listener Q&A, thanks to all that submitted questions. So we'll be going through some of those tonight and looking forward to all those questions that we got.
Yeah, we try doing one of these at least once a month during the season because everyone's got a lot of questions and we'll try to provide the best answers we can. We got a nice little mix of questions, some prospect ones, some MLB ones, some strategy ones too. So good little mix of questions here, but we'll get into that in a second. But before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our dynasty and prospect rankings. And of course, check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Top-notch content from top-notch content creators over there. Written work, podcasts, tools, you name it, RotoBaller's got it. Use the code TOOLSHED, get you 10% off at checkout on any premium package for any sport you want, which is RotoBaller has a lot of content for a lot of sports. So go check that out over at rotoballer.com. All right, so the first question here, which is very fitting with the news today of Jordan Walker being optioned down to AAA. Drew Clark asks, it's a tongue-in-cheek comment, but I think it was a good one to lead off the show with. Drew asked, which team will Jordan Walker win an MVP with in 3 years? Can Koki find Adelis Garcia, Randy Rosarena, etc.? So, you know, Walker, yeah, the surface stats were not good. No one's sitting here and pretending that a 155, 239, 259 slash line is good. And you get to hit home run, doing not much of anything. But you look under the hood, and there were some improvements made. Again, small sample size, but barrel rate's up to 11.9%. Average EV is up over 2 miles an hour so far this year. Zone contact and contact both up about 3%. Chase is down 4%. So under the hood, there were some improvements made. So it's discouraging to see them option him back down. Though, are we really surprised? They did this last year when he was hitting like 280 in May or whatever it was. So I'm not overly surprised by this, if I'm being honest, but stinks to see him get optioned down. I get some Walker shitters, both redraft and dynasty. But you know, my long-term thought process and evaluation on Walker has not changed one bit, even through these struggles. I still believe there's a 30-plus homer bat, and a guy that can give you a little bit of speed as well, 10 steals over a full year, and hit for a decent average. So I'm still very much in buy-low camp, and you probably got cut bait with him in redraft if you have him right now, unless you're in a deeper redraft league. But in Dynasty, he's a hold if you got him from me, and a buy-low if you don't. And I think he's one of the better buy-lows around right now.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that what I'd probably do is I definitely drop him in a redraft league in most all context. But in a Dynasty, I'd probably wait about a month, because the longer that Walker is down, the more that his stock or perceived stock is actually going to really tank. And so from that, it's like, all right, there is certainly something to be had here where you can buy low, get a potential good return on investment, and not cost you much at all. So I think Walker will be fine. He had made some strides with contact rates this year. He had made improvements with his exit velocities and barrels, which is good. And I know that he wasn't lifting the ball. Like, I understand that. But at the same time, like, he was making improvements, I thought, just not getting the results. Also, I think the team just royally screwed him over by putting him in the outfield. We're talking about a 6'6" giant. And yeah, big guys can play the outfield. We've seen that with Judge. You know, James Wood plays the outfield. But yeah, I think that while Walker's a good athlete, he wasn't a natural outfielder. It was almost doing him a disservice to be placed out there. And that probably had an effect. When you have to work to ultimately learn the position while also learning to hit major league pitching at 21 years old, it's pretty tough. He did that, and he put up a 116 WRC plus last year, which, I mean, that's pretty spectacular for a 21-year-old. I understand people are like, this guy sucks, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, people, come on now. Like, it's way too soon to be writing off a player like this. Like, they're throwing him the same sentence as Jared Kelnick, who is far from a finished product too. I don't think either of these guys are complete bust at all. I still like Walker long-term. I think he'll be fine personally. So I would buy in a Dynasty, depending on the cost. I don't think he's going to cost you much. But like I said, I'd probably do it and wait a little bit. I think that would be your best bets, to sit on him a little bit and see what happens. And there's the opportunity to buy. But no, I'm not overly concerned about Walker. I just think that he was done a disservice. And in a key development time, that's not ideal by any means.
No, absolutely not. But there are four players right now that are younger than Jordan Walker in major leagues. Just four. Jackson Merrill, Evan Carter, Jackson Chourio, Jackson Holliday. Three of them happen to be named Jackson. But that's it. He's the fifth youngest player in baseball and has more career plate appearances than those other four guys put together. Obviously, he came up last year, had almost 500 plate appearances last year, and hit .276 as a rookie. Some people commenting when I made a tweet about it earlier, and saying, oh, he was brought up too soon last year and he wasn't good. I'm like, he hit .276 as a rookie. That's pretty solid. And yeah, the performance this year has not been great. But again, the improvements have been made under the hood. And I think we're both still pretty high on him long term. The upside is still absolutely there. So yeah, Jordan Walker, don't give up on him just yet. He's still 21 and he'll be 22 in about a month. Still very young. But next question here. Another young player who is actually older than Jordan Walker, a prospect, JWIES, Juiz, asks, how soon for Manzardo? What's stopping the Guardians? Chris, when do you think we see Manzardo?
Pretty soon. I think that we're really close. What's stopping the Guardians is service time. That's what I would say, at least, is stopping them. They're a good team. They are...
Yeah, they're winning right now.
I know.
It's not like a desperate need for them.
No, and that's the crazy thing. We were talking about their record before we started recording. They've been playing really good baseball. They're 17-7, at the top of the AL Central. Who would have thought that, honestly, if you told me that the order was the Guardians, Royals, Tigers, Twins, and White Sox, the White Sox, yeah, get there at the bottom. But yeah, I would be shocked to see the Guardians and the Royals 1-2, especially considering what Cleveland did this offseason. But they just always find a way to win. Now the question is, where does Manzardo fit? And I think the natural answer is some first base and some DH. We've seen that from Naylor. Naylor's kind of bounced in first base and DH role. Esteban Florial has been DHing. I don't think Florial is blocking anybody. Like, he's not somebody that's going to block Kyle Manzardo. He's been fine. He's striking out 37% of the time this year, so he's not blocking him by any means. And we know that Manzardo's going to have to play one of those two spots, first base or DH. Naylor's played some outfield in the past. I don't see that happening again. If I'm just being honest, I don't see him going to the outfield.
I don't know.
Not sure how that would work out. He did play one game out there last year. He had an inning in the outfield last season. I wouldn't count on that. He did, the last time he played meaningful time in the outfield was 2021. So that's a good bit of time. Manzardo, I do think he could be one that comes up and has some bumps in the road. Like, I know everybody wants the next top prospect to come up. I think that the Walker transitioning to Manzardo talk, like, it just brings up a good point that this is a really hard game. There is a massive jump from AAA to the majors, because the reality is what, and honestly, I think the AAA competition is better this year than it has been in the past, but there's a lot of quad A guys up there. You look at the average age of some teams and they're rolling like 30 years old for an average age. So you're facing some pitchers that just are quad A guys, the guys that never made it in the majors.
Like
and the
Bruce Zimmerman.
Yeah, he's been pitching there forever. He's throwing a night. I think at the end of the day, we have to realize that this is a very tough transition. The expectations should be tempered. These guys aren't, most of them don't come up and light the world on fire immediately. We have been spoiled by a lot of good performances with top prospects. Some guys unexpectedly come up and do it. Other guys struggle. And I think that we should temper expectations for all guys, but Manzardo has a good feel to hit. What kind of power he gets to, that's still the question mark. He certainly added some EV over the years, so it'll be interesting to see. But I think that he's probably up within the next 2 weeks to a month, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think it's sooner rather than later. If he's not up by the end of May, I would be shocked. Yeah, it's going to have to be. I think maybe they do a rotation, him and Naylor, first base DH, kind of back and forth. I mean, in the last week, Naylor's started four times at first, two at DH, and David Fry got the two starts at first base when Naylor was at DH. We, like you mentioned, Florial is there. He's been hitting a couple bombs, but striking out a ton, which is the thing with him. And he could also play in the outfield too. Yeah, I don't see it being a long time from now. Again, if it's not by the end of May, I would be shocked. And he's one where, obviously, speed out of Manzardo, so he'll need the bat to be there to provide value. He can't fall back on speed. Something like a Victor Scott could when the bat wasn't right. So he'll need to provide good average and hit power right away. Will he? He could. He's one of the better pure hitters in the minor leagues. We all know that. But as Chris said, even look at Jackson Holliday. Still running the 50% K rate in 36 play appearances so far. Even the best pure hitters, hitting prospects, can struggle. That's just the nature of the game and what makes this game so tough to excel in. But yeah, Manzardo, I think, is up soon. And I think he could be long-term. I think, I don't know why, for a comp, I keep thinking like maybe like Nathaniel Lowe, something like that. Yeah. Got like a back end top 10 first baseman or like a really good corner infielder. Is he ever going to be a stud? Probably not. Not unless he maybe gets up to 35 plus home runs, which probably not, but I wouldn't fully rule that out. But I think he's going to be a pretty good, not a stud first baseman. Next question from Ed from the Bronx says, the frighteningly high K rates of touted young prospects like Green, Vaquero, Roderick Arias at low A, has anyone in recent memory had such a high rate and brought it to somewhat respectable levels as they moved up the ladder? How much does K rates increase per level typically? That's kind of a hard one to answer. There's not like a blanket answer for that, but I will say, you know, if you're striking out, don't really look, we've talked about not putting a ton of stock into low level, especially like DSL complex level numbers. But if a prospect is striking out a lot in the low levels, that is a major red flag for me. These guys, that's why we talked about Vaquero and Green last episode. When we did three up, three down, that we're both pretty out on both of them because they have been striking out so much at the low levels. And that's a concern. Is can it get better? Sure. But that is a hard thing. If you already have that level of swing and miss in your profile, it's hard to bring it down to respectable levels if it's already like pushing 40% or higher in those levels. So yeah, that's a major red flag for me, guys like that.
Yeah, and I will say that Roderick Arias is in a different camp than Green and Vaquero to me, because yeah, Arias, he made some really good improvements last year with contact. And yeah, I still want to see a little more, because obviously he ran high K rates in the DSL, was last year the Mirage. I think it's still probably too soon to tell that for sure, but Arias is in a little bit different camp. But Vaquero, he's always struggled with contact. Elijah Green, he just can't touch a baseball. Like, it's just not good. So I look at these guys and I would say I'm certainly out on Green and Vaquero. I think that it's very hard. Like, we see power gains over time as guys mature in age, but we don't always see contact growth. That's just not something that's this linear that we should expect. And not every player adds EV either, but for the most part, most players aren't steadily improving in their contact rates. And when you're making contact in the 50% range, like, that's just something that's way too far gone for me. So I am certainly out on Green and Vaquero. I'm still in on Roderick Arias. I need to see a little more before I say the same about him, because he did have a really good year last year and had really good contact rates. So I'm still very in on him, but we'll see. Yeah, it's a good question. I think that it's very hard to change.
Yeah, and I totally agree. Arias is not in that same kind of grouping yet, and I think he has way more upside than those guys too. Yeah, Arias is still a guy that I'm pretty high on, but we shall see how he progresses over the next year or two. We'll probably get a good sense of what he's going to be, what the issues are, and then we go from there. And next question here from someone named Dynasty Football. Who will go first overall to Cleveland in the MLB draft? I keep forgetting they have the number one pick this year. They're off to a 17-7 start and have the number one pick in the draft. That's pretty good. I don't know, Chris, this is a tough one because there's not like a clear-cut number one guy. We have some guys that are near the top, Condon, Burns, Bazana, but they could go Nick Kurtz. Do they go under slot? I don't know. What's your thought process right now on where Cleveland goes?
I think that one thing is for certain, that they're not going to pay full slot value for a player.
Yep.
That's the one thing I'm confident in, is that they're not going to pay up. And that's not a bad thing. They're going to utilize it around the draft and work some deals out later. So I do think that is an interesting spot to be in, because there's not a clear cut number one. There are plenty of options, and I think that they're going to surprise some people. And I don't think that anyone is going to know up until the day of. Condon has emerged as the top. I think him and Bazana are easily the 1-2, at least looking, if you're looking at it from the standpoint of like, all right, these are the two best players. And Jack Caglione has worked his way in there. I will say, like, I was out on him prior to the year because just the contact was terrible. The chase rate was terrible, but he's made improvements. So I think that's something to note. I think that it's going to either be Braden Montgomery at one, or it's going to be like a Jay Weatherholt, because his cost isn't going to be as high given that he's been hurt most of the year. He could finish the season really strong in that change. Or, God, I don't know. I think Nick Kurtz is certainly a real possibility too. The Guardians are semi-changing their approach, where they were all contact-oriented, no power types. But now, for them to take a chance on Davison De Los Santos in the Rule 5 draft,
yeah, that was weird.
That's a little bit of a change of a philosophy. They took some guys last draft. It's like, all right, like, you can see they're shifting a little bit in philosophy, which I like to see. I would say the dark horse is Braden Montgomery at one, who's a masher outfielder out of Texas A&M. I think that most likely, probably Kurtz. I just don't think they pay up for Condon or Bazana at one personally, but could be totally wrong there. That's the fun thing about the MLB draft, is that we ain't got a clue what's going to happen until it happens. And that's what makes it really fun. But I will say this top of the class is really good through about the top 10. It's certainly there with last year's talent in the top 10.
Yeah, no, it's really, really impressive. Top 10, top 15 or so. I would say like a super, this is more of a dark horse pick than even Montgomery. Like super dark horse, maybe Siever King. I don't know if he goes that high. I think he could be top 10. They haven't really shored up that shortstop position. I think Kurtz is a good pick there. I just wonder, I'm like, all right, they already have two first base DH guys with Naylor and Manzar. Do they go another one with Kurtz? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't think they go Bazana. I don't think they go Condon. I don't think they go Burns. So like you mentioned, I do also think they go Underslot. Do you think there's any chance they go with, I don't think they go Connor Griffin, or maybe, I don't know. That would He'd be Underslot.
He may cost a lot. If you're talking about a prep guy going one, I think that he's going to demand a pretty high slot. Just right. He has all the leverage in the world. He could, it wouldn't happen, but he controls the leverage because he just goes to college. Not saying that's even a realistic possibility. You never know what's going to happen. You're right. It's a draft full of corners. And you mentioned that the Guardians already have those corner spots locked up, as you mentioned, throughout the system. You also have Ralphie Velasquez, who's a full-time first baseman now. He's not a catcher.
Yeah, it's true. So yeah.
You've got those corner guys. You've got Jose Ramirez, which I'm not actually sure when. Kurtz isn't playing third base, so it doesn't matter. You've got Ramirez through 2028. Yeah, it's not even a thought there. The middle, that's why I've said all along that I think Siever King is going to go higher than people think, because he's a true up the middle guy that the draft just severely lacks. Like all the top college guys are, you know, not middles, which maybe it brings Travis Bazana into the equation, a second baseman, but it's right now, I think it's still too hard to say, which is why I think Weatherholt makes sense. Weatherholt may have seen his stock fallen enough where it's like, all right, we can get him under slot right now at one overall and then have a lot of money to play with. And Weatherholt's talented enough to go one. He's just been hurt. He's had a lot of lower body issues. All the talent's there, and he's an up-the-middle guy, which could fit.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely not a – yeah, obviously you got Bazana, you got Weatherholt, and you got King. That kind of falls off a bit for middle infielders. But I don't know. I don't have a great answer for this, but I will say I'm 99.9% sure it will not be one of the three I just mentioned: Condon, Bazana, and Chase Burns. I think those. I would be shocked if that's the name that we hear on draft day. But moving on here, next question. This is from T Money Star: Horton, Mizorowski, Smith-Shawver, and Leiter. Short-term and long-term valuations. Says he's holding all four with limited roster space to stash. Now, who should I trade? The one I definitely would not trade there is Horton. I am the highest on him by a considerable margin over the other three. Leiter, I'm still not like fully sold on. Yeah, he looked better, you know, end of last year. I talked about him last show. We'll go super in depth. Like, we talked about how he improved after he came back from the IL last year. Walk rates come down. I'm still not fully buying into it. So I think if you can, I would trade Leiter. He's the one I have ranked the lowest of these four. Smith-Shawver and Mizorowski, maybe trade Smith-Shawver too, but his value's down, so it's not a great time to trade them. But yes, I'd go Leiter, I guess, is where I'd go here with who I would trade, but just definitely not Horton. Any of the other three I'd be fine with. I wouldn't lose sleep over, but definitely not Horton for me.
Yeah, I think that you're probably going to get the most value. Like, I don't want to trade Horton. You may get a lot of value trading Mizorowski, which I'm not opposed to. I think that arm could blow up at any minute. And while he's been awesome, there's certainly some reliever traits. AJ Smith-Shawver's stock has dipped a little bit, so I'm not sure it's a great time to trade him either. And Leiter, I think, has a lot of name values. Maybe it's a trading Leiter because of the name value there. And the fact that they caught him up, there's been some progress, but still, he's one that I would ultimately want to trade. Yeah, I think you could go. I would say the best ones that I would want to trade are Leiter and Mizorowski.
Yeah. Mizorowski, obviously, he's very talented. So he has just as much upside as Horton, but still has a walk issue. Even this year, he's at 12, I think 12 walks and 14 and two-thirds innings, I believe it is. So still got some things to work on, even though the upside is very high. But yeah, so I agree with that. I think Mizorowski or Leiter are probably the two ways to go there for that one. Next question here from BlueJays27 says, thoughts on Byron Cherio, Cole Young, and Juan Brito for Dynasty. And Chris, I know you're not the biggest on Cole Young, if I recall correctly.
I think he's fine. I think Cole Young is just a better real life prospect than a fantasy asset, in my opinion. Like, he's going to do a lot of things, but I don't think he stands out in any one place. Yeah, you know, not all that dissimilar from what Juan Brito can do with the bat, but Young, he's 20 years old. He is in Double A. But I look across the board and it's like, all right, he's got a really good feel to hit. He's going to put a lot of balls in play. The power is the question mark. And long term, like, how much speed does he have and how much does he run? And he stole some bags last year. He's still 22. He's stolen four this year. Long-term outlook, I'm still a little skeptical of how much he steals. So I think that Young's a good player, but I'm not like overly high on him.
Yeah, I just don't know how much he impacts the ball long-term. I think he could be maybe a 10, 12 homer guy, 15, 20 steal, something like that. So I think he'll be fine. But and I have him as like a back-end top 100 prospect right now. But the upside just isn't there. I think his ranking and perceived value got pushed up, I think, too high. And I went too high with him in one of my updates, but I've since dropped him back down a little bit. He's solid, but I still see a major impact player. Same thing for a guy like Juan Brito, where we've seen him put up pretty good OBPs, 391 minor league career, almost as many walks as strikeouts. And so the approach that we know is there, but how much power and speed does he add? He's doesn't have a lot of power. Speed is maybe around average. I think he can give you, maybe 15 steals over a full season, but didn't really run that much last year and was caught 7 out of 10 times. So not a great base stealer in general. First career, he's been caught 24 times in 66 attempts, which is not good. That's about 3% or so. So I don't know how much he'll be even given the green lights when he does come up, maybe later this year or next year. I don't know. I just don't see a lot of impact there. Is he even a starter long term? I think that's the question. But Chris, where are you at on Brito now? I know you were high on him at one point, which I know it has tempered a bit. But do you still think there's a kind of a viable fantasy future for a guy like Juan Brito?
I do, because he's projectable. That's the difference in him and Young. Even though I will say I have Young ranked a decent bit higher, probably 30, 40 spots higher. Brito, he's listed at 5'11". He's not 5'11". He's all of 6'2" at least. I think there's some projectable power in that profile. He hasn't really gotten to it. I think last year he hit 14. He has 2 this year in 90 plate appearances, which is not great. I think that there's certainly less speed here. Like, you get more speed out of Young. But yeah, I think Brito's interesting. I still like him. I think he'll come around. I think that he could be in Cleveland pretty soon.
And Byron Churio, I don't know. I'm not sure how I view him. There's some projection left, but he's not really hitting for much power at all. He really hasn't hit for power. He had one home run back in 2022 and nothing since then. So he has one home run in 89 plate appearances, 89 games, 377 plate appearances over 3 years between Miami and Minnesota. I mean, he's a good athlete, solid speed, but another one that's been not super efficient on the base pass. I don't know. He's a hard one for me to rank. What about you, Chris? Like, where are you at on Churio?
He's one that I'm a little bit higher on after seeing him in spring training, saw him on the backfields in a couple of minor league spring training games, and he's looked good. I honestly, this is the Churio that doesn't really pan. Like, obviously, Jackson's been a stud, and Jason's been looking really awesome, but yeah, my perspective changed a bit on Byron, and some of the Twins guys were really high on him as well. He is got a projectable body, can certainly get to some power, and he's hit a couple balls pretty hard this year. I think that he could slow down with time. Like, he's stolen bases. I think he could still slow down a bit in the stolen base department, but I will say I think that the field of hit can be there. I know he's put up a 33.3% K rate so far this year. He hasn't homered, but there is the recipe for success with Churio, and it wouldn't shock me at all if it all clicked over the next year or two and he became something. I'm not saying he's going to be a top prospect, but I think he can be a potential top 100, back end top 100 guy at some point. So, Churio is a good kind of deeper league investment.
Yeah, no, that's fair. All right, next question from AJ Valdez. Jared Jones, everyone is trying to get him from me. What would you need to deal him if you even would? So that's a great question right now. It's a fun one to think about. Like, first off, like, where does Jared Jones kind of slot into the starting pitcher landscape right now? Obviously, he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball right now with the number one K rate, number one K minus walk rate, number one swing and strike rate. He's up there on everything. And if he's not first, he's damn close to it. But it's small sample size. And I think it is a valid question right now to ask, is now a great time to sell high? He does fall into one of those three windows that I've been talking about for a while now. But do you want to? Chris, I know you were higher on Jones than most before all the hype came up on him in spring training. Would you look to deal him right now? If you do, you got to be thinking, I'd aim high, top 50 dynasty asset right now. Mm-hmm. I think is what I'd be looking for.
Yep, that was the number I was looking at too, was a top 50 asset. Jared Jones is a really good pitcher. Jared Jones has been the best pitcher in baseball to this point. But does it all come back to earth? Yeah, he's not going to continue doing this. There's no way. I do think that it's a case where if you deal him, you better be darn happy with the return. You better get a return and you say, I am very pleased. Not just, I don't know. You better get something spectacular. I'm not trading him for a package of three players because more does not mean better. And I think a lot of people think that, oh, I'll give you three average players. No, I don't want that. Like, I'm looking for a high-end, established player that helps me go. I think that you keep him otherwise. There's zero reason to trade him if you're not making your team better. So where's that line? Who would you trade for him? Looking in that 50 range, I don't know. Would you take Tarik Skubal for him? I don't know if I would. I think Skubal's a better pitcher, probably, but
I think I would. But at the same time, I'm wondering, if you're trading Jones, it probably makes sense that you're dealing him because you need more hitting than you do pitching or something like that. Yeah. So I'm looking over at the hitting side. It sounds like a lot of these guys in this range are like injured or not doing well so far. But would you deal him? There's a lot of pitchers in this range too. What about O'Neill Cruz?
Yeah, I think that's the range that you have to think about. Yeah, like, Cruz has all the upside in the world.
The hitters I'm looking at, like Cruz, Junior Caminero, maybe a buy low on Evan Carter. I think CJ Abrams will be too high at this point. I wouldn't do it. Maybe Adelis Garcia, if you're win now and need a bat, though he's 31. But yeah, I think that's what you're looking at here is easily a top 50 player. Maybe you get Ozzie Albies on a buy low because he's hurt, something like that. But yeah, I would aim super high. And if you're going to trade a guy that's pitching this well, like, it has to be a no-brainer. Like, you get an offer or someone messages you, you're like, hey, I'll offer you this for Jared Jones. And if you have to think about it, the answer is probably going to be no. But if you're like, oh, damn, that's a great offer, like, I have to take that, then yeah, then it would make sense to move. So I'm not opposed to it. As again, he does fall into that one of those windows of selling high on a player. But yeah, you better get back a damn good return. But before we move on, Chris, did you see that the strikeout yesterday or 2 days ago, whenever it was now, on from Jones on Bryce Terang?
Oh, yeah, where he just completely got obliterated and fell.
You just got to retire if you're Bryce Terang. Terang's having a pretty solid season, but so obviously I kid. But yeah, that's you saw him little smirk walk back to the dugout. He knows that that's going to be a gift for forever and end up we talking about that. Remember that time 10 years ago? That slider was, and I don't fault him because it started out as a strike. It wasn't like it was started out inside, and that started out as a strike and just completely took off to the back foot. Yeah, that slider is absolutely insane. Yeah, that was a fun video to watch for sure. All right, next one here. From Stuart Hamilton, asks, deep prospects, I think, puts outside top 200 with a good chance to contribute this season. I was looking through it here. There's not a ton of guys that I'm looking at that are going to make a big impact. I look at Damiano Palmigiani, who should be up at some point this season. I mean, they just brought up Addison Barger, so maybe they keep bringing up some other guys. And Relvis could be up. Palmigiani should be up as well. Yeah, I think maybe Xavier Edwards with Miami could contribute this year. especially in the speed department. But you know, maybe you see like a Hayden Bird song out with San Francisco, maybe Richard Fitz with Boston, Mike Vasile with the Mets. Those are guys I'm looking at here. Kapovich is just inside my top 200, but you'll see him soon. So those are some of the names I've looked at here. Any other names that you like that fit here, Chris?
Yeah, I think that Jonathan Rodriguez, outfielder with Cleveland, is going to be contributing pretty soon. It is his second year in AAA. He doesn't get much fanfare, but we're talking major success the last 3 years now. 2022, he hit 26 home runs. In 2023, he hit 27 home runs. He's already got 5 this year. Puts up really good batting averages as well. We're looking at 301 average this year. Hit around 286 last year. Jonathan Rodriguez is highly underappreciated, and I think that he could be one that comes up. And while can he fit with Kyle Manzardo? Yeah, absolutely. There's still a spot in this team to make it work in the outfield with Jonathan Rodriguez and Kyle Manzardo on the roster. So I wouldn't be shocked if we saw him. My Marlins pick is Victor Mesa Jr. And blast from the past. Yeah, he's been really good. Blast from the past name. His brother, Victor Mesa, was the stud that got the big bonus. And Victor Mesa Jr. has been okay. Last year was really his breakout. He had 18 homers and he stole 16 bases last year, but he hit just 242 this year. Taking everything up a notch. He's hitting for power. He's made major improvements in the contact department in AAA. So he's knocking on the door. He's 22 years old and certainly could fit in this Marlins outfield. I think there's plenty of opportunity for him to step right in and contribute. Obviously, they do have a lot of outfielders there, but currently we're talking about Nick Gordon starting out in left field. He could beat him out. You're not going to dispel Jazz. Maybe not even Jesus Sanchez, who has actually not been very good at all. So we keep waiting on Sanchez. They may not wait on him much longer. Speaking of, he just hit a home run tonight. So as I'm bad-mouthing Jesus Sanchez, he hit a bomb. But aside the point, I think that Victor Mesa Jr. could certainly find his way into some playing time this year.
Speaking of Victor Mesa, where the heck is he this year?
That's a great question.
He was released last year. Middle of the season, there was a disagreement with the coaching staff, and he's not in the Marlins org anymore, and he doesn't have any stats on BREF for this year, so maybe he's a free agent out there. But yeah, he was one that really fell off. There was so much hype on him, and he just really did absolutely nothing with it. Like, it was like he was like good for a year, and then he fell off. Like, no, he just did nothing right from the get-go. He hit 235 his first year, and then 249 was where his average peaked at in 2021, so that's just not good. But yeah, you're Victor Mesa Jr. He made my prospects team of the week for the one I did a couple days ago for last week. But yeah, he's been surprisingly very good this year. So yeah, I can definitely see him up. You know, there's a lot of spots in that Miami offense that some guys like him and Edwards could fill out for sure. Next one here from Sylvan Lane. He asks, what's your long-term outlook for Rafaela after his tough start? Yeah, I'm still very high on Rafaela. Thing is, he's aggressive, and we pointed that out. He's always been an aggressive hitter, but he had the contact skills to make it work. But you know, major league pitchers are the best pitchers in the world, and they figured that out, and they've been getting him outside the zone a lot. Chase rate's 41.5% this year, whiff rate's 32.4%. So he's going to need to reel it in. His first pitch swing rate is over 20 percentage points higher than the major league average. Major league average is a tick under 30% at 29.7. He's at 50.6%. He's aggressive, and that's getting exploited. So now he needs to adjust back. And luckily, the Red Sox have so many injuries. I'm waiting by the phone for them to give me a call to come play third base or something like that. So he's going to stay in the lineup. Obviously, a phenomenal defender, which helps. Can play center, can play second, can play short, which they absolutely need right now. So that's the good thing, is that he's going to have some time here to work out these issues he's having and make the adjustments. It's time for him to adjust back, see if he can do that. And if he can, there's still solid pull side pop here. Obviously, he's a good athlete, can steal a ton of bags. So if you can live with it, will be a lower OBP, but maybe still hit for decent average. But I still think there's a solid impact fantasy player here. Obviously, he needs to make those adjustments, but I think it's a good time to buy low, and I don't think he's going to be out of the lineup anytime soon because of lack of other options. So he'll have a chance to work through it all. So, yeah, I'm still pretty high on Rafael long-term. But what are your thoughts, Chris?
Yeah, I think that with a profile like Rafael's, it's going to be bumpy. It's going to be up and down. There's going to be good stretches and bad stretches. There's going to be times where he looks really good and other times where he doesn't. I think the power is going to be hit or miss. I think he's probably settles in as a 15 home run type bat long term. He's got speed. He can steal. And the batting average is probably not going to be great. Like, he's going to be a better real life player because of the fact that he has such a good glove. He can play all over the place. Ultimately, I think that Rafael is better suited for real life than fantasy, but he does have traits that could provide him to be a decent asset for fantasy purposes.
Yep. No, absolutely. Sticking in the American League East here, Zachary Gordon asks, what's stopping Cameron Arnaud from being up with the big club? The injury didn't really help. I think he would have been up right now if he hadn't missed the first, 2 weeks of the season or whatever it was. And he's been fine since he returned. He hasn't been dominant, hitting 265 and 8 games with 2 home runs. So he's been decent, but I think they're just waiting for him to really start dominating for like a week or so, have that really hot week, and then bring him up. But they've been playing Isak Paredes at third, and he's been, you know, actually pretty good this year. And they've gotten serviceable play from the middle infield too, with Ahmed Rosario. He's been playing right field a lot lately, but Jose Caballero has been playing shortstop. I don't know. I think the question is, do they view Cameron Arnaud as a shortstop anymore? Where do they? Yeah, they. I don't think they do. They've been playing him only at third base. 8 games, 8 starts at third. So the fact that if they were going to get him up maybe within the next few days, would have figured they'd be giving him some time at shortstop right now. But maybe they can move Paredes over. I'm not sure. I'm hesitant. Like, at first I was like, all right, he's going to be up super early, but maybe this is one where we have to wait a little bit. But I don't know. Chris, do you have any good idea of when you think we see Cameron Arnaud?
I'd like to think it's soon. He certainly is in a service time game at this point. Like, I know he's debuted, but doesn't change the fact that keeping him down longer certainly helps out their little game with service time they play. He is still 20 years old, so young player. That's right. Obviously important to note. The injury set him back. He's played just 8 games this year. So those things are worth noting. I think that obviously Cameron Arnaud has the bat to be ready. He's a third baseman. I think the days of him being a shortstop are done. He's played just 2 games at shortstop. No, actually, that's not true. He did play more shortstop last year. He played 2 in the majors last year, which is interesting. But I think that he's likely a third baseman. They do have, obviously, some guys that can play short in Jose Caballero. They have Ahmed Rosario, who can play up the middle, too. I think that the situation's tough right now because you have Yandy Diaz, who can obviously hit. You have Isak Paredes, who somehow keeps performing. He's like the guy that always overperforms the X stats and just does his thing. There's a spot for Cameron Arnaud, though. This isn't the kind of bat you just hold down for no reason. At the end of the day, though, the frustrating thing is that a lot of these guys, there's going to be good players on the bench at Tampa Bay, just how they roll things, how they platoon. Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see how it shakes out. Curtis Meade homer tonight, side note, which is good. First major league homer for him, which is great to see. Actually, he homered last year in the majors, but first of the season this year. So, yeah, I think Cameron Arnaud is probably a couple of weeks away, but it wouldn't be shocking if they kept him down even longer.
I think the most probable path maybe just be DH, because right now Paredes has started exclusively at third base this year, hasn't played. All 23 games at third. Last year was mostly third, a little bit of first, a little bit of second base. Do they move him back over to second base? I don't think so. Meade's been playing there the last week with Caballero at shortstop, and actually Rosario's been playing a lot of right field lately. So, but Harold Ramirez is their DH right now. He started the DH in 5 of the last 6 games, and he hasn't been terrible, but he's been mediocre, let's say. So maybe they bring him up and just have Cameron Arnaud DH a lot and get a start here and there at their base. Or maybe there's an injury that pops up for the next week or two, as we've seen plenty of injuries this year. But I do think he's up within the next month, but I don't think it's going to be like within the next week or anything like that. A few more questions here. We got two from Yvonne Tidwell. First one, what do I do with Henry Davis patience? And he asked patience question mark. And Chris, you know, obviously the hype on Davis was really high during spring training, offseason improvements he made. And then he was one of the better hitters in spring training. And then it's fallen flat on his face here. So do you think there was, I hate to say that the spring promise was fluky, but do you think there's still some legitimacy to what we saw from him in the spring? Is he a buy low, or are we seeing the real Davis? What are your thoughts here?
Man, this is just, the Davis situation is maybe just want to throw every bit of spring performance out the window.
Yep.
Even tangible change. So I'm talking about somebody that added bat speed that was making improved contact, and it's not there. So I don't know. I think that Davis is droppable in redraft leagues at this point. Like, he should have found another catcher at this point. If he hadn't already, obviously he can play the outfield too, but you know, Davis to me looked like a guy that I want on all my rosters, and he has certainly not looked like a guy I want on my rosters anymore. So yeah, I think that patience is probably out the window for redraft, for dynasty. He is 24 years old. So yeah, there's still some potential for him to get back with that bat. I'm going to be patient with him in the dynasty league more so than in a redraft setting.
Yeah, I'd still remain patient, at least to some degree. I mean, obviously right now, it's not a good time to sell him, obviously, so I wouldn't recommend doing that. So if you have him in dynasty, you know, unless it's a shallower format, I would still give him a few weeks, because like we said, he was one of the best hitters in all of spring training this year and made those tangible changes in the offseason, adding bat speed. So I'm willing to give him another few weeks and deeper, just bench him for now. And then if we're getting into May, June, and he hasn't really turned this around much at all, then maybe you can look to dropping him in dynasty as well. And the other question here from Yvonne is around Joey Loperfido, asking, what is the long-term upside on Loperfido? I know you guys like him, but how good can he be? First of all, I think Loperfido is still pretty underrated. I put out one of those dynasty duels from the Toolshed accounts between him and Kjerstad. I was like, oh, this is fun. They both had 10 home runs this year. And this was right before the call-up for Kjerstad. And there was a lot of responses saying, not only Kjerstad, but Kjerstad by a mile, which makes me, if you prefer Kjerstad, fine. But I think by a mile is just not, you know, that's just not what it should be. Loperfido, yeah, does he have a lower floor than Kjerstad? Sure. Is Kjerstad a better pure hitter? Sure. Loperfido's got pretty good power and can provide more speed. I don't think he's going to be 27, 32 steals like he was the last 2 years, but even if he's going to give you 12 to 15, that's more than what Kjerstad's going to give you, which kind of offsets a little bit of the batting average boost you'll probably get with Kjerstad. So long-term, I think these guys are pretty close. But yeah, Loperfido's been striking out a lot in Triple A this year, but remember that one of those games he struck out 6 times, so excuse the data a little bit. It would still be high, but not, you know, quite as high. I think it would be like 28% without that one game. So I got it, walks a decent amount, has good power, will be in a good park and in a good lineup. So I think there's a future where he's a maybe a top 100 fantasy player. We'll see. There's like a wide range of outcomes for him due to the little bit of a higher K rate. But yeah, I'm definitely a fan of Loperfido.
Yeah, he's been really awesome. He had another one tonight, 4.59, I think. He's absolutely swinging a hot bat. He's going to be up pretty soon. He has the versatility. He can play first base. He can play second base. He can play outfield. That's huge. So I think that strikeouts are going to be a part of his game. It's just the nature of it. Kjerstad, I think Kjerstad's going to have some strikeout issues too. I don't think that I was a little bit surprised by the comments on that poll. Everybody just flaming away about Kjerstad. But I like Kjerstad. Obviously, I have Kjerstad ranked higher. But I think Loperfido provides the juice. He's got some speed, and he's got versatility. So I think he can be really good in that sense that he can play all over the board. He can give you, multi-position eligibility. I think that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Last one here from Mason, who asks, everyone has their own go-to regarding pitching analytics, but what do you guys find the most useful? And then he asks, XERA, Sierra, FIP, XFIP, or other. In terms of, pitching analytics, I don't really look at the those too much. I do to a little bit, maybe say, like, oh, maybe this guy's been unlucky or too lucky. You see like a big gap between his ERA and then some of the ERA indicators. But for just for analyzing pitching, and we had a great discussion about this. I forget what episode it was, but when we had Nick Pollock on back in February, March, whatever it was, obviously Nick's one of the best pitching analytical minds in the entire world, even though he'll never admit he is. But you know, we had a good discussion on this, kind of what to look for. But you know, K minus walk rate is a huge one, as that tells you, you know, can this person miss bats and can they limit their walks, which is obviously two huge things in this game. Limiting hard contact in the air is another big one, and I always like to see a higher ground ball. That's not a huge thing, but like, look at a guy like Hunter Green. Yeah, he can miss bats with the best of them. He's had a K rate above 30% for his career, but gives up too much hard contact in the air. And when you play half your games in Great American Ballpark, that really limits him. And that's why he's had an ERA 4.546 for every year of his career. So that's a couple of the ones I look at here. But what about you, Chris? What do you look at with your pitching analytics?
I like to normally dig a little bit deeper. I like to look at your individual pitch usages, velocities, movement patterns, profiles, and that sort of stuff. But if you're looking at a broader sense, like I think it's simply K minus BB is a really good thing to look at. It gives you a general idea of how well a player's performing, and typically strikeout minus walk rate is a good indicator. So you look at that. Does a pitcher allow a lot of fly balls? They keep the ball on the ground. Those are the simple things to look at. XERA, I think it's important to like understand like what all these things mean. XERA factors in a lot of StatCast data. So if a pitcher's giving up a lot of hard contact, they're naturally going to have a higher XERA. FIP obviously takes fielding out of the equation. So it looks at like just, you know, batted ball probabilities, all those things, takes those out. And then XFIP reduces it down and looks at a 10.5% of fly balls induced. So knowing like what all those mean, I think are important and how they work, and all have different usages, whether they're descriptive, like describing what happened in the past, or predictive. But honestly, I think that if you want to keep it simple, just use like strikeout minus walk rate, ground ball rate. Like those are pretty good indicators. If you go on Savant, you can look at like whiff rates for each pitch type. That's pretty useful too. Do they have an arsenal where they can get with multiple pitches? If not, do they throw a sinker that keeps the ball on the ground? That's stuff to look at too. But I think that the interesting thing is like we've seen like this big IVB revolution. Like everybody wants the high IVB fastball guys, but not every pitcher can do that. A lot of guys are sinker ballers and they shouldn't be trying to throw a riding fastball up when they can't effectively spin it that way. So I think just blanket stuff and saying, oh man, like this guy gets high IVB, so he's really good, is just not looking at the picture how it should be looked at. Rather, I think that each pitcher is an individual arm and brings a lot of different things to the table. So knowing what kind of pitcher it is, I think there's a variety of things that you can look at and use, but keep it simple. K minus BB, walk, ground ball rate, those are good to look at. And then if you look at the in-depth stuff, I like to look at the pitch data, look at how the pitches move, how those things work, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, one other thing I want to add too is what we talked about this, like Zach Allen's perfect example. I like to see a pitcher able to use all of his pitches to both righties and lefties. I hate when you say, oh, the guy's a four-pitch guy. Is he really? If he's only using his fastball and his slider to righties? No, he's not a four-pitch guy. He might have four pitches in his arsenal. The only time we really see those two-pitch guys excel is when they're Spencer Strider and guys like of that nature, and those guys are a dime a dozen in the game. Seeing a good pitch mix, guy that can command all of his pitches, which is hard to find like a stat that encapsulates command, obviously, but obviously Chris broke it down very well as well. So there's a lot of ways you can look at it. There's not like one blanket way, like, all right, this is how you look at pitching, how you analyze it, but we've seen guys that come in all different packages, so to speak. You look at a guy like Logan Webb. Obviously, he's never been a guy that's been super high whiff rate guy because he's a sinker baller. His thing is using that sinker, limiting hard contact in the air, and that's how he finds success. And you usually won't see those games where he has 23, you know, whiffs. He's usually got 8, 9, 10, 11 whiffs, something like that. So yeah, the way that pitching comes so much differently, there's no one way to analyze it, but Yeah, those are, we've listed off a lot of stats and metrics here, but those are what we look at here. But that is going to wrap it up here. Great episode here. What a fun questions. Thank you to everyone that submitted these questions. We'll be doing these monthly throughout the season at least. So do another one of these probably later on in May. Got a lot of fun episodes upcoming as well. In baseball, we're almost a month in, and we still got another 5 months or more left of the season. So we'll be back with you again on Monday. But until then, everyone take care.